Old man winter's coming here in the Northeast. And what does that bring? That's the W word. Yep, we're going to talk about antenna wire maintenance and prepping for maybe the next outage. Who knows? So next on Live Free and Ham. Well, hello and welcome to another Live Free and Ham podcast. This is our bi-weekly show where during we discuss ham radio topics in New Hampshire, New England, and beyond. So whether you're a regular listener or a first-time guest, which we hope you are, we're excited to have you here and appreciate your support. And thanks again for tuning in tonight's show. So let's get into the show. I'm your host, as always, call sign N1JUR, with my co-hosts,
Paul, N1OG.
And the general, W1STJ, Todd.
Where's Shaq? All right. Well, if you get that joke, you know how to do a dad joke then. All right. So before we get into our topics here, we got a few things to catch up on. As always, you can head over to our storefront at livefreeandham.com/shop and check out all of our cool merch. We've been a little lax here. You know, it's been a little busy for a little while. We haven't had a chance to update a lot of some of the shirts in there. We've got to replace Paul's Jump Someday shirt with the I Did It. We're working on those plans. And we definitely have a couple of newer ones coming. So definitely come by, check it out, keep your eyes peeled, you know, put those little Google trackers on. And, you know, once we get our shop updated, you'll get alerted and you can be the first to grab some cool merch from us. And as always, you know, we appreciate everybody who's purchased stuff from us in the past. And thank you again for supporting our show. And, you know, as always, you know, one way to support our show outside of the merch is always way through feedback. You know, you can always send us a review message through our SMS link, or if you're an Apple Podcast listener, you can do the Apple Podcast reviews. And so with that, you can also head over to our website and use our comment form. There are a few people in the past that have used that way too. So we recommend you, or if you're so inclined to join our Discord, head over there, go to the show channel, let us know what you think about the show there. And we'd love to share it on our next episode. So, but with that, we obviously always go into.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story.
Hey everybody, we got some news.
Slow down, Boog. Let me handle this. We've got some news. I've got bad news and bad news.
I have reviewed ship's personnel, Captain.
Congratulations, you've got mail.
Well, with that, Paul, I hand it over to Todd. You know what's up, man? How are we doing the review bucket?
We have no reviews. We have no mail.
We need a sound effect for that, Paul. There we go. Our marketing budget's a little, you know, shallow and empty this month. So, you know, if you can help out that way, that'd be awesome. We'll get better sounds.
I've been looking. There's nothing. So, unfortunately, I don't have any mail to go over tonight. Ugh.
Mission failed. We'll get them next time.
There we go. The budget has increased slowly but surely. All right. Well, that's a bummer. You know, you can always head over to our website. You can email us at livefreeandham@gmail.com. Or you could use our SMS link, like I said before, in the show notes. Let us know what you like, what you hate, what you don't like, anything. Like, let us know what your favorite color is. We'll be happy to tell people in the world what your favorite color is. That's how desperate we are here, folks. Just kidding. either way, you know, you could always send us a review. We'd love to hear from it. And we just want to know how we're doing, you know. It'll go from there. And so with that, you know, every month we say this, and every month it's always the same. We always have our live show scheduled on our YouTube channel. So make sure if you haven't head over there and subscribe, that you do subscribe and ring that notification bell so you can get notified when we go live. Because every month we go live and we always have something interesting, special guests. Sometimes we just sit around and talk to each other. You know, that's just kind of the way it goes. It's simple as that. How you doing, Paul? I'm doing fine. You know, how are you doing, Todd? I'm doing great. Yeah, you know, just simple as that. And then we end the show. But, you know, enough of the banter there. You know, as we do every episode and we love doing, we're going to dive into our.
Doing good.
Good.
Doing good.
You do. That's good.
Do good. Do good.
You're doing good.
Good.
Absolutely, I do.
Good.
Doing good, Bob. Doing real good.
And right now, my only outlet is my ham radio.
All right. Well, as we all have come to know and love this episode, segment, episode, shtick, whatever you want to call it, You know, we want to do good. We want to hear about the good that's happening in ham radio. We want to share, spread the love. And so there's always 55 different reasons to complain, you know, and we don't want to be one of those 55 reasons. We want to hear the awesome stuff that you might be doing with your buddies, or your club or an organization that revolves around ham radio. Come share it with us, because I'm almost positive, and I'm going to throw it out to the floor here, guys. Any do good this week?
I didn't really hear of anything that was clubs doing good, but I just want to give a quick shout out to everybody that participated in Noble Skywave. It's a big Army and Army Mars event that just took place this weekend. And from what I understand, it was very successful. So great job.
Cool. All right. Well, that's at least some good news, man. That's ham radio. That's what we want to share with folks. So if you haven't learned about something like that, you definitely head over Flag and Torch. Or if you're in the military, you probably have heard about this. Get involved. Get excited about ham radio, and, you know, just get out there and hang out and have fun and play radio outdoors, man. That's, you know, what it's all about, right? So, you know, with that, Todd, have you heard any good do good stuff at all?
Not really. I know some of the guys in our club are starting to do more POTA, trying it out for the first time. So that's a positive thing. So word's getting out to get out there, and they're enjoying it. I've been talking on the repeater about it, and I've been letting Marvin use my flex until he gets his. So that's a good thing. If you're a flex owner, let your pals give it a shot. You might turn them into a flex guy.
Or ICOM owners, you know. Hey, you know, I gotta give Paul credit for what's the software you use, Paul?
RC Forb.
Okay. So if you're an RC4 user or don't know what it is, check it out, or you know, email Paul. He can get you set up and show you how to do it and get you configured there and get more people out there, you know, helping others to, you know, play radio when you can't play radio. You might be in an apartment and not be able to set up an antenna. That's a perfect example of that. So that's awesome. Okay. Well, so with that, you know, obviously,
once again, the communication
so with that, because down. Of the communication process seems to be broken down here, this is what I'm going to tell you. We want to hear your do good stuff. So these are the ways you can send in your do good. One, email us at livefreeandham@gmail.com. Simple and easy. Everybody knows how to use their email client. Just send us a do good. Put do good in the subject line, and we will make sure we read it in the next episode. You know, or you can head over to livefreeandham.com/do good, all one word. Fill out the form. It'll come right to us, and we will happily read it online and share it and spread the love. Or, you know, if you're an overachiever, like a few people like we know, Mike, N2MAK is one, you know, use Winlink. Paul is listening. He is standing by, waiting a bated breath for you to send him an email on a do good in whatever your story is. I mean, that is simple. Just do it. Send it. We'll share it. And if you do Winlink, we'll have you on our next live show. So, you know, time is coming.
And he stays up all night waiting for those Winlinks to
all
come through.
All the time. You know, he has got his radio on 24/7, waiting patiently. He's like Santa Claus waiting for, you know, every letter to show the North Pole. Okay, well, so you've heard it here. So you know the four ways that you can get a hold of us and share your Do Good episode. And so once again, please share the do good, you know, spread the love. People want to hear it. It might spark some new ideas with some new folks in their clubs or in their places they hang out and play radio. And it will just keep making ham radio that much better. So with that, we're going to dovetail into one of our favorite episodes, because, you know, we're here to support Todd. We're here to make sure that he can join the ranks of the next extras in the world. And so with that, you know, we are...
And now for something a little extra with Todd W1STJ.
Just for the record, I went on the app today to do a quick study, and it said I hadn't studied in 7 days. I'm like, oops.
It's like a confession, man. It's literally just like the Catholic diocese hanging out in the background.
Oh, man. So I might be a little rusty, but I got to get on this.
Have you genuflected? Have you prayed the rosary? You know, the whole nine yards, man. Come on. To our Father Ham.
All right. Let's see. Which...
So
I'm itching to get moving into sub-element 5. So start studying, Todd. Right.
This is your warning. Your final shot over the bow.
All right, you didn't want to do your little spiel.
Hey, you know, at this point, if you've been listening this long, you already know my spiel. Just go right to it, VE Quizmaster.
All right, four out of five VE Quizmasters agree. This is awesome. Exactly.
And the ARRL is not available for comment.
All right, Todd, so jumping right into it. Question number one, which of the following can be used to determine the Q of a series tuned circuit? Is it A, the ratio of inductive reactance to capacitive reactance, B, the resonant frequency of the circuit, C, the bandwidth of the circuit's frequency response, or D, the frequency shift?
I'm going to go with A.
All right, Todd says A. Eric, do you agree?
I should pay attention to the question.
You're trying to figure out the Q of a series tuned circuit.
It's inductive resonance reactance, a frequency, it's not C, bandwidth. It's, I'm going to go with inductance over capacitance. Wrong.
I thought it was the right frequency. I was also wrong. It is the bandwidth of the frequency's response. All right. So, quick, silly attempt at remembering the answer. The right answer has frequency response in it. So, every Q question deserves a response. Now, Q stands for quality. The frequency response is a measurement of quality. It's a much better explanation, but I dig the silly little way to remember it, too.
Yeah, it works.
I'm just glad you got it wrong, too.
Suck!
All right, here we go. Question number two. Which trigger mode is most effective when using an oscilloscope to measure a linear power supply's output ripple? Is it A, level, B, single shot, C, line, or D, edge? And you've already had this one, so...
I know. I'm stuck between A and D. I'm going to go with A.
Eric?
Yeah. I'm going to go with A.
I'm going to tell you you're both wrong, because it's C.
Well, we're on our way to really being bad.
Failing the extra. So, you don't have to hear that song.
if you Super. Remember, we've had this on the show before. And linear, because you're measuring linear power supply output ripple, you use a line.
Right. Gotcha. 100%. It's still an extra.
And the funny thing is the last time that this question came up, Eric got it right using the exact logic to get it right. And he got it wrong this time.
Well, I'm a lack of sleep. So I'll use that as my excuse.
All right. Well, for the third and final question, What causes interference received as a series of carriers at regular intervals across a wide frequency range? One more time. What causes interference received as a series of carriers at regular intervals across a wide frequency range? Okay. Is it A, wireless security camera transmitters, B, switch mode power supplies, C, electric fences, or D, radar transmitters?
don't remember this question, but I'm going to go with B.
Yeah, Eric? I definitely know it's switch mode.
It is, in fact, switch mode power supplies.
Well, you know, because I've had experience with electric fences, so I definitely know it's not those.
So, in regards to the switch mode power supplies, interference is generated because the frequency that the transistor turning on and off is often hundreds of kilohertz, which produces a square wave, which radiates a large amount of EMI as a result of the large current that the transistor switches. So there you go.
There you go. Well then, there we go. Note 2 out of 3 ain't bad. Woohoo!
No, you can't. You cannot win.
We got one right. Do you have one for the one right?
1 out of 3 ain't so good. Baseball, 1 out of 3 is bad.
1 out of 3 in baseball ain't bad. It's almost the batting 1,000 sometimes. All right. Well, so with that, if you are in the studying for your technician general or extra class, hopefully you're doing a hell of a lot better than I am and Todd today, because that was a good performance. Yes, that was not a good performance at all. But in that case, you want to head over to hamstudy.org, because it's an excellent resource to getting your ticket. And, you know, it's also one of those resources that will haunt you and hunt you down if you aren't studying on a regular interval. So keep that in mind. It'll be worse than your mother saying, hey, did you brush your teeth and comb your hair? And so, as always, if you've received your license or upgraded, let us know. We'd like to recognize you on the next episode for your hard work and effort, because we are going to do that for Paul, for Todd. Why do I keep doing that, man? Anyway, it's one of those evenings.
Paul Newman.
Yes, Paul Newman. Exactly.
No relations, even though
the salad dressing guy, right? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I was related to him, but I'm not. Different spelling.
Well, there you go. Well, so with all his hard work and effort, we'll hopefully celebrate with him and you as well. If you want to email us at livefreeandham@gmail.com, we will make sure we mention it on the next show. And as always, as we get into our usual format, Paul, how's your ham radio week been?
Well, let's see. It's been a long week, to be honest. So after Support Your Parks weekend last weekend, I went and did my first soda.
Mm.
And I'll tell you, I learned a lot. So it was I picked the shortest of the 48 4,000 footers, Mount Tecumseh. And I started at the Waterville Valley Ski Area parking, and I went up. It took about 3 hours to reach the summit. Stayed at the summit for an hour, made 4 contacts, so it was a successful activation.
Now, HF or 2 meter or both?
Yeah, HF. I wasn't able to raise anybody on 2 meter. I called out on the calling frequency a few times. I called out on the adventure frequency a few times. And, I guess nobody could hear me. So I took the Reliance NFED antenna, and it was kind of cool. The rock was like, I don't know, 3 or 4 inches below like the trees, right, to the summit. Mm-hmm. And so I just stood there and I draped the antenna across the little treetops and made like a little lazy L with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the SWR wasn't great. It was like 3 to 1, but it was good enough to get the 4 contacts in the log. On the downside, I took the wrong trail down and added about 6 miles to the hike. And what? So by the time I reached the base of the mountain, I was on the wrong side of the mountain. And so then it was another 6 miles down Tripoli Road to get back to where I had parked. Fortunately for me, I flagged down another hiker that was going to their camping setup that night, and they were willing to drive me the remaining 4 miles. So I got a ride for the last 4 miles back, but it was an experience, and I'm going to do it again. But I will not be using the Gigaparts Explorer backpack. It is not a very good mountain climbing bag. It doesn't have top strap adjustments. And so the way that the weight rides in it, it kind of sits low and the
on your back. Ugh.
Well, so you would like it to sit on your hips, right? But the the belly strap doesn't actually give you any support or anything. And so even if it's cinched all the way down, it doesn't ride right. Very, very, very uncomfortable for the 9 miles total that I did. And so now I'm looking at other bag options and trying to find a better bag for doing summits. But yeah, never a dull moment though, you know. I didn't get to play in the contest this weekend. I was too busy doing Halloween decorations and other things. But I'm gonna try and figure out the mess in my recliner over here, which is my POTA setup, and I'll try and get out to a park tomorrow. So
yeah, cool. So okay, so a couple of things. You did go with a companion, so that made the sting of messing up even harder, I'm sure.
Yeah, especially since I had read ahead of time that the summit was confusing, and if you take the trail to the northwest, it will take you down the wrong side of the mountain, and it will not be good. And I had said several times at the summit, you know, I said, look, you know, I know we cannot go down to the northwest. There's a loop at the summit. Mm-hmm. So as long as we came up one and we go down the other, we'll be fine. And, I had neglected to take a second bearing with my compass before we departed. Mm-hmm. And, I took the trail to the northwest.
Why didn't you go down the trail you came up on?
Well,
because it makes a loop, and the trail that I came up on was the Sozman, which is the more difficult section. It's literally, I mean, it's like 3 feet wide, and it's rock cliff, and you know, I mean, you're scaling, you're climbing and scrambling over the rocks, and you know, fortunately, I had Watson, which is great, because like I'd climb up a couple rocks, and then I'd get him up next to me, and then, you know, I'd have him help kind of pull me up.
It's like an anchor point.
You know, go, Watson, go.
Yeah, just you get him up above me, and then use him, and yep, it worked
so
out.
So when you say a loop, you mean you go up one and then down back to the parking lot, but it's like one big trail. It's not like you're up.
Yeah, right. So
when
there's...
When you first said that, I thought it was like a loop around the top, and then you'd go back down.
Yeah, no, so what I should have done, right, was I should have come up the way that I came up and gone straight across when I left. Right. And that would have looped back, and then I would have been back on the same trail I came up.
Right.
But instead, I went to the left, which is the northwest, instead of the north.
And it went halfway around the mountain. Wow. Yeah, I've been there.
It was an experience.
You'll remember it, man. That's the funny part. It's like I had same experiences, and like I sympathize with you. And I was like, man, but my mistake was I ended up going 10 miles out in the wrong direction and had to like backtrack that 10 miles and then the other five that I was supposed to do on the trail. So we were in the middle of the dark when we did it. And I was just like, oh, this was just a bad, bad decision. and you know, I had crappy, you know, before packs got really good, like I had the big wireframe metal ones, and you know, it was an experience as a kid for sure. Never forgot it though.
No, to give me kind of a further kick in the sack here, right? Is I got hours and hours and hours of fantastic footage all the way up. And okay. And then at the summit as well, and all of my contacts, and I've got it on the hard drive, but because my computer storage is so limited at this point, with all the, I mean, I've got 3/4 of the hard drive filled with just software. Okay. So trying to do video editing of, I mean, you're talking, I think it's, close to 40 some odd gigs of video, right? It just doesn't like it. The computer has been hating me all week. I've been fighting it, trying to get that video edited because I want to put it out. And yeah.
Although on a sidebar, you forgot to mention you did put out your jump video.
Oh yes, I did. The cool thing with that actually was, as I sat down to do the jump video editing, Carlos had posted in Patreon and he was like, "Hey, I'm doing video editing. Jump on in, you know, to StreamYard if you want." So I jumped into StreamYard with him and I'm doing my jump video. He's doing a park video and we're just shooting the shit the whole time. And I've literally got a grin ear to ear because as I'm doing the video, it's all replaying in my mind. And it was, yeah. I could watch that video 1,000 times over. It never gets old.
So how much footage did you get for the jump video versus what you, like, how much did you edit out?
So, the footage that they gave me, it was a little better than 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. And cause they had edited it into a video and then they gave me like a highlight reel. And so I took the video that they gave me and I added in the footage that, you know, I had taken and I should have actually added in, my wife had sent me a video of me landing. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was kind of a different perspective and I didn't think about it until after I had rendered it. I was like, "Oh damn, I had that footage. I should have thrown that in there." But
you can put your clips out on Patreon, man.
Yeah, I mean, I stretched it out to an 8-minute video, you know, with all the precursor stuff, and then, you know, the last 2.5 minutes is the best.
Oh yeah. Did you get a chance to see it, Paul? Sorry. Damn it. Do it.
No.
Todd, sorry.
No, I haven't. I'm going to watch it right after this.
So I won't spoil the fun, but yeah, like I when it hit your Patreon page, I was just like, I turned to the wife. I was on the couch. I said, "Hey, you want to see Paul's jump?" And she's like, "Hell yeah." And I'm like, "Okay." So threw up on the big screen and streamed it via the phone. And they were like, "Oh my gosh, his face is so like they were commenting on your face being blown, but then he's like, his face looks the same when he landed on the ground." I'm like, "No, that is his smile." I'm like, there's no doubt in his mind. Like, he literally stretched his face. His smile was so freaking huge. So it was definitely good.
That's awesome.
Well, anything more? Because I know you sound like you've had a really busy week.
that's good enough.
Okay. All right. Well, with that, Todd, how is your ham radio week going?
Terrible. Absolutely terrible. I did nothing. I did not get on the contest tonight. I did not do a POTA. I did not do anything. I've just been prepping for the winter coming around the house, getting leaves, cleaning up stuff, putting the outdoor furniture down to the shelter, organizing that, getting rid of all the stupid animals that are living in my shelter, you know, that kind of stuff. And then, I just didn't do much ham radio, just on the repeater. I've been talking to everyone every morning. I think this week I've gotten someone, Bill or someone's on the air. So it's good. You know, I like doing that, but, no HF stuff. Thursday, I think I'm going to be off because I'm bringing my daughter to college, Suffolk. She wants to go do a tour of Suffolk College, and my buddy works there. So he's giving us a tour, and then we're going to go out to dinner with him in Boston. So
nice.
I'm going to take Thursday off, and I'm hoping Wednesday I can get in a POTA down at the rail trail.
Yeah, that'd be good.
It's supposed to be nice Wednesday and Thursday. It's supposed to be in the 70s, so should be good.
Telling you, man, it's one of those Indian summers again, and we're all of deep freezes coming. It's gonna soon.
It was cold though. I went flying this morning. The RC said it was cold this morning. I mean, and it said it was only 40, but it felt like it was 20. Yeah. And it warmed up, but it was still cold. I was like, "Oh, do I need to bring gloves?"
It was not sweater weather. That was for sure. There was no sweater weather. Yeah. Jacket and a sweater on. So
yeah,
that sucks. Well, dude, hey, that's okay. You know, you're studying for your test, you know, and you're on the repeater. That's even the better part. Like, I think you and I keep passing each other every once in a while in terms of hitting, you know, we usually have a conversation.
I heard you. And then you were talking to someone and then you're like, "All right, I got to go." And then I got in right after, but you're already gone. So didn't want to interrupt your cue. So, I mean, during the day, if I'm in the car, if I'm in my car, it's because the work cars are already, someone already took them and I'm not in it very long. So it's like, I feel bad, like to say something and then, oh, got to go. I'm at my destination.
I don't take offense to it. Sorry. So feel free. I feel worse off. Like every time, like I go out and do errands and it's like every 5 minutes I'll get to my destination and we'll be in a thick of a, like I was talking to Christian, I think. And I was like, I got to the post office. I'm like, Christian, dude, I got to jump out of the truck real quick, go to check the P.O. box, be right back. So I jump out and come back in and we pick it back up. And then I'm like, oh, I got to go get dog food. And you know, you keep going through that list. And it's like, I'm like, Christian, he's like, yeah, I know. Don't worry. Just go. It's like at this point, I'm like, okay, whatever. So it's all good.
Our repeater, you know, the Bedford repeater, N1QC repeater in Bedford, it's been doing really well. I mean, it's been very clear. Where was I at? I was kind of far away. I was, is I out in Bow maybe?
Oh,
Bow or what's that? Yeah. What's past Bow? If you're heading, you're at Bow and you're heading like west on 89, whatever town those are, just past Bow and Concord.
Oh, wow. Hampstead,
that's Henniker. Henniker. I was getting the repeater in Henniker.
Oh, huh.
That's pretty good distance. I mean, for our repeater.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, so I've just been doing that, and nothing really. I wish I was doing more. I really do, but I was a busy work week, and then I just needed to get some stuff done. And now that baseball's over, I was slacking during the baseball season, not getting stuff done, and. Mm-hmm. You know, if I don't get it done now, it's going to start snowing. I'm going to be screwed. So,
well, here's the one final question then. Are you going to be another statistic like KC5HWB with your DX Commander?
It's still sitting in the box over here.
So is his, but he's been going on 5 years. I think last time I checked.
I don't know how long I've had mine. Hey, but you know what? Today I'm cutting the. This is like the weirdest thing. So I have a riding mower and it's a pretty big. I think it's like 55 inches. It's a pretty big riding mower. It's got three blades in it. So I've got Zach out there with my full big gas leaf blower, and he blows all the thick leaves out, and then I cut the grass, and, you know, I pick up the rest of them. So it's like a two-man operation. We get it done pretty quick. I'm going to dump the leaves, and all of a sudden I see in front of the lawnmower was my lawnmower blade, like just sitting there on the ground with the bolt. I'm like, what the? I'm like, is this mine? Like, I'm like, holy shit. So
it fall off.
I didn't hear it. Like, it didn't make any, it didn't like go flying or anything. Wow. Like it was just there. So I got lucky. So I was like, shit. And I just started. So I'm like, all right, I drive the mower. My dad lives two houses down. So I said, all right, he's got a car lift. I'm like, oh, it'll be easy. I'll just drive it on the lift and bolt it back on. Mm. And of course the freaking wheels of the lawnmower don't fit on the goddamn ramp. Because they're too wide, and I'm like, you gotta be shitting me. So he's like, oh, I got some ramps you can move, like those portable car ramps. So I just drove it up that, and I went underneath, and it was easy. You know, I just used the socket thing and put it back on. But, you know, I'm like, nothing's easy. I wasn't even gonna tell him. I was just gonna go in the garage and put it up, raise the thing up, and he wouldn't even know. And he was like, what are you doing? I'm like, I need the ramps so I could fix this stupid blade. And that, and the other thing was like, maybe I'll just cut it with the two blades. Skip the one, but I got it done.
So. Uneven lawn.
Yeah, but I definitely need new blades. They're pretty beat up, so I'll do that in the spring.
Yes, that's I guess the positives for me for not being on or being in an HOA. But anyway,
that's it. So yeah, I will. Cool. Try to do more for next week. Hopefully I'll be able to tell you a POTUS story or something.
Sounds good to me, man. Either way. All right.
What was your ham radio week like, Eric?
Oh, thank you, Paul, for asking. I appreciate it so much.
I should ask you when I'm done. So, Eric,
don't throw me a curve here. So, ham radio week. This week as we're recording, it was CQ Worldwide. I decided to do a live stream with that. Learned a lot, we'll have to say. I have a feeling I'm gonna have to keep tweaking that, but overall my audio levels are great. The two or three people that I had on all enjoyed and had a lot of questions, so it was good. But I was anticipating that I was going to probably bounce around on the bands when I was doing it, but I stuck on 10 meters. 10 meters, I could barely, like, I only streamed for an hour and I could barely get through. I started at the top of the band and worked my way down. I was only a quarter of the way through the top of the band before the hour came up. And I'm like, I haven't even had a chance to get to like the middle part of 28, you know, 100 and even below that. And I was like, that, I was like, oh my gosh, there are so many stations out there on CQ Worldwide. It was fun to get in there. I mean, I'm just a points, you know, giver, so I don't, you know, really spend a whole lot, you know, submitting logs or anything like that, but it was fun. You know, I got a chance to play around with the Flex and learn a little bit more about, you know, contesting. And so I did some of that. And then, I'm trying to think if I did. Oh yeah. So I finished up my HF install on the truck. So that's 100% done. I finally did all the bonding and grounding. Sad to report that my truck is so RFI noisy that no matter what I do, if the only way to get rid of it is to pull out the, you know, the motor and basically, you know, run off of, you know, maybe batteries, because that's literally the only way I'm going to get rid of RFI coming in from the radio. Now, the saving grace is, if depending on what band I'm on, as long as I don't operate on 40, I don't put the truck into a weird limp mode and, you know, send it, the computer, into this tizzy. If I stay on 20 and 10, I can put the noise blanker on and it gets rid of good, you know, most of the alternator whine noise, but it's still not that great. But, you know, hey, I'm not going to probably spend a whole lot of time making contacts in the truck when it's running, you know, unless I warm up the truck, but most of the time I'm just going to be an accessory or running off a battery. And so, you know, I'm happy with it. I've got a couple of few, what we'll call 2.0 add-ons to it. So I'm looking forward to kind of sharing that, and I'm finishing up those videos. But like you, Paul, I have a lot of video and I'm trying to squeeze out hard drive space myself too. So, yeah, I know the pains of trying to find places to put it and then figure out how to edit it and then get rid of it and never hold on to it again.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you need to buy stock in ferrite beads. You got to ferrite bead everything.
I do. Sadly, I do. I have everything double wrapped in some very thick, you know, ring ferrites, the clip on ones. I mean, everything's pretty much, including the up to the antenna into the radio, has a ferrite clamp on it or has a couple of them. And you'd think they would take care of it. And then I'm like, oh, maybe the last saving grace is grounding the radio to, you know, basically the chassis of the truck. No, it's less, but it's still there. It's like, it sadly Christian confirms.
Aren't you supposed to ground your whole truck?
Yeah, I did. Like, I grounded the frame. Around. I grounded the frame, the tailgate, the doors, the hood, the exhaust, the antenna where it mounts to my back rack. I mean, I have grounding straps over everywhere of the truck. I mean, it's like ridiculous how many I have. And I like did overkill. So like I ground down the frame. So it was bare metal and then, you know, primered over it. And, you know, so everything's got some bare metal to bare metal contact, but it took it down just a little bit. It wasn't enough. And I've got to go back and review the video to see if there, like, it was a really big one, but my test before and after, at least when I initially did it, didn't really make that much of a dent where I've been like totally quiet. So yeah, it is what it is. I can listen to it.
I won't be putting HF in my my Jeep anytime soon. No. I'll just hook it up manually when I want to do a winter poda
and then operate off a battery. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and that's kind of my thought was, is like I had the antenna. I went a little farther with the buy once cry once approach and put a SO239 bulkhead connector off the back of my bumper. And so I've got a coax, RX8X coax that runs up on the inside of the frame, comes up into the cab, and then goes into a coax switch. So I can either put a big 10-meter mast in the back of my hitch mount and then tie the antenna right into that coax and use the radio from that, or I can use my ATAS that I have on my truck. So I've got options. It's just, you know, what I want to do, you know, at that point, if I want to run a dipole. And like I said, I've got battery hookups, so I can hook up right to the radio, and I get digital. So, yeah, I'm sitting pretty. I'm happy. It's done. And I just now have to edit all the videos and get them up on the channel. So those are coming soon.
So, yeah, I was at I forget where I was, but I saw a truck, and I couldn't tell if they were ham radio antennas or if it was like some kind of weather station. like a weather hunting truck, like searching for bad storms or whatever, because it had all kinds of antennas, but it had like a little satellite thing. And I was like, what? And I should have asked. Like, I was at the gas station. I was like, what the hell is that? Is that guy doing ham radio, or is he
a prepper?
Yeah, right. I was just like, and then when we were at Nearfest, I saw some like car that had like antennas that were, did you see that car?
It
was like
this
little dinky car, and it had like 10 antennas on it. And they were, I was like, that whole freaking antennas must weigh more than the car.
That, and just like, dude, where are you running all that coax? Like, there's no way you can get all that coax into the vehicle and then put it into some sense of a coax switch. This is just impossible.
Like, I'm just, all I could think of is like, this is like a guy that's like Eric's next door neighbor that the HOA said you can't use ham radio, you can't have antennas. So he just mounted them all to the roof of his car.
That would be, he would be a perfect candidate for that.
Yeah, I still think we should just get a small trailer and put a huge mast on it with a huge freaking beam and just park it right in your spot.
Well, we're about a third of the way there. I have a trailer. I don't know if I want to put a big mast there, but we're talking field day plans though for that.
Yeah. All right. So what are we talking about today? We're talking about what? Winter prepping.
Okay. Yeah. So one of the things that kind of I was running into, and we alluded to and talked a little bit about last episode, was around the lines of, you know, preparing a little bit more for emergencies. We've obviously been hearing a lot in the news. We've been hearing a lot of, like, you know, other podcasts and shows and YouTubers talk about all of the things that they do to prepare for storms and some of the radio communications and stuff. It kind of got me thinking of, like, well, you know, what am I doing, you know, just in general? I'm not like a big prepper at all, and I would never constitute myself one, but I've got a little bit of a kind of a process going, both ham radio and we'll say non-ham radio, for like a lot of the things that, you know, we're going to run to. I mean, we're not due for another 500 year storm yet, as far as I know, but winter around here, you know, tends to bite hard in some cases. So I think talking around that, what do you guys do yourself? I know Paul's probably got a good list there, and I know Todd, you do probably do some stuff that's, you know, ham radio not.
Yeah, but the first thing I do is read the Farmer's Almanac. And that tells you exactly what you're in for. Yeah.
No. Okay.
But I do, you know, I am like a little weather geek, and I like to follow weather and read, not listening to like the weather guy in the news, but I like to go onto the apps and read and kind of make my own predictions. But the way it's set up now and what they're predicting, and I don't know, they've been predicting the same thing, that we're going to have warmer temperatures, more moisture, more ice storms, less snow, but depends if the jet stream. So basically they don't really know. If the jet stream stays north of us, we're going to get a lot of ice and shitty weather. If the jet stream drops, we're going to get a lot of snow. Makes sense. I'm hoping that it drops, because if it drops, I'd rather have the snow than the ice and that kind of stuff. And what I do to prep is I call Eric and I say, hey, my antenna came down last winter. Can you come over here and shoot it back up in the tree? And let's get it up higher this time.
Okay. Your one antenna. You haven't had to do any maintenance on your 2-meter antenna, though, but you should check some of that stuff out.
That one is, I can't get to that one. So if that thing shits the bed, I'm going to have to buy a cherry picker or something. It's too high up. I don't have a ladder high enough. I did it when the cherry picker was here, when they were fixing my chimney, and they left it. So I put it up on the weekend, and he left it there all weekend, and they had the keys in it, so I used it. So I haven't been up there in a couple of years. It still works. But my HF antenna, you know, what I do is when it does get ice on it, start using it. Thing heats up and melts the ice right away.
Mm-hmm.
So and then I just hope and pray that it just doesn't sag too far down and stays up there. And it was windy this weekend, and that thing was blowing all over the place, and it's still up there. So I think we got it up there pretty good.
Okay. So you got a little bit of a setup there. And so you thought any more about, like, okay, power goes out, what do you got for that?
All right. So I got a backup battery. I got my solar panel. I got my big battery charged up, ready to go that I use for field day. I've got two generators, house generator and a smaller one. Mm-hmm. Someday I'm going to get like one of those bigger battery pack generators that can basically do the main appliances, but you can have it inside your home.
Like a power wall or whatever.
Yeah, I don't think they're coming down in price. They're still overpriced, but they're basically just a big battery that you can plug shit into.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, so as for ham radio, like if the power goes out, well, I got my battery back up, and I've been thinking about at some point when I find the time, maybe after baseball ends for me, I want to put my whole ham radio, all my radio gear, I want to set it up on a solar panel. So I want to use it. I want batteries, and I want to run it off the batteries, not off my house, and just have it constantly charging. And that way it'll just always be on, and who knows. Okay. That's just an idea I have. As for other prep, you know, if I lost my HF stuff, you know, I'd probably just throw up my, you know, if the wire came down, I had the need to be on HF in the shack, I just throw up the Buddy Pole Pro. Seems to work. Just stick it outside my front yard.
You heard it here, folks.
And just use that temporarily until Eric can come over and shoot the thing back up in the tree.
I am not advertising antenna repair services, just letting everybody know in advance.
And speaking of that, did you see at Nearfest that they were selling guns?
Yeah.
And they were launchers?
Huge cannon launchers. Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw those. I was like, yeah, this is too big for me. Okay. So you got a couple of things. So we're going to circle around kind of in this, what I'll call the micro stuff, meaning like HTs and batteries and all that kind of stuff in a bit. But
I've got the HTs and things charged, mm-hmm. and batteries and stuff.
They're all ready. I mean,
worst case scenario is I just grab my POTA bag and go in a car and I'm good to go.
Okay. So sounds like you got some, you know, some modes of communication with you and a kind of semi light plan of, you know, getting things ready. So, you know, I know once I tell Paul, we're going to get like the whole plan because I know it's coming because he's probably prepared on all of us.
The food, the water, you know, I would say my number one prepare, what I should do more is just buy more ammo because the way the world's going, I'm probably going to need it. But I got a plan for that because my neighbor up the road, he's a nut. He's got more ammo than probably the U.S. military.
So, and
he
told me,
he goes, if shit hits the fan, just come up to my barn. We'll be good to go. I said, all right.
Well, okay. All right. So we'll start with Paul because it's going to spark some questions for me because I've got a light setup and I'm probably in the same boat as Todd. I'm not like overly, we'll say, prepared. I do have some contingencies in place, but it was making me think because it's like, yeah, what do I even have for like the basics of stuff that's non-ham radio related that kind of would be like essentials that I know I got, you know, caught with my pants down when we had that huge ice storm 30 years ago, whatever it was, and really wish I had. But so enlighten us, oh dear, Mr. N1 OG.
The honorary Eagle Scout.
Yeah, exactly.
The scout that never made it through scouts. well, so I would say ham radio wise, okay, let's start, mm-hmm. let's start there. Antenna selection is important. And so from the start, I chose an antenna that was built and designed for New England weather. And that's the K1 JEK Cobra Ultralight. Mm-hmm. The first round, I had the Junior up, which is a shorter antenna. I think it's 75 feet total length. You know, but I learned some things first couple winters, right? Like I didn't have, you know, ways to have strain relief for the trees swaying and ways to have strain relief for the ice and the snow. And so like Todd, I had to call on Eric in the spring a couple times and say, hey, can you help me get this antenna back up? But unlike Todd, I revised the antenna setup each time. Right. And so
I got mine better. I got springs and stuff on it.
Yeah, all right. Did you steal cable?
No. I'm not as good as I know what he's going to say.
All right. So in the final iteration, what I did was I took 100-foot steel cables and I attached the pulley on one end and left the other end, you know, a loop so that I could tie it off. And so the pulley is where the Dacron runs through for the antenna. And that comes down to springs for screen doors. So I got two screen door springs on either side, and the pulley is on a steel cable. And so, like, in doing traditional prepare for winter, you know, activities. Yesterday I went out and I double checked my steel cables and made sure the tree hadn't grown, you know, through them, and I could move them, and I could move my pulleys, and that my Dacron lines were free and the vines hadn't, you know, climbed up the line and made it so that, you know, the springs were rendered ineffective. So the antenna is good. I do have a backup, which is the Cushcraft R7, which Eric also helped me put that up.
Speaking of Cushcraft, I was hanging out with Bob Cushman. That was his company.
That was today. His company. Oh, today? Yeah. Oh wow!
Yeah, he flies the model airplanes, and he goes CQDX CQDX. Now he responds to me now, like, "What's up, Bob?"
Bob's so funny.
Yeah, but yeah. So go ahead.
Yeah, good antenna. You know, if I had the ability to have a tower, I would definitely go with the VHQ hex beam, because that's also built for New England weather. Mm-hmm. Steve OSX, he's got one. He's right around the corner from me, and I always envy the ability to turn the antenna. Mm-hmm. No, I can't turn mine. But so then once you come in, right, I've got four batteries as backup, plus my 100 amp hour and multiple solar panel setup so that I can recharge everything. If I can't use the computer now because there's no power or whatever, now at least I've got the Tough Book as a backup, and I can charge the Tough Book off of 12 volts. So, you know, there's redundancies in regards to the HF ham radio setup. Then I've also got battery backups for my heat and hot water because, mm-hmm. hey, you know, if we have a bad winter, which I don't think we're going to have a bad winter again for another couple of years. But,
a while, yeah.
Yeah, but once, it's going to come around. And, mm-hmm. you know, we'll be without power sometimes, you know, 2-3 days. And so you want to be able to at least have heat and hot water at the bare minimum.
Minimum, yep.
Okay. We changed our electric kitchen stove to a gas stove. So now even if the power goes out, we can still cook.
Still cook, yep.
And then I've got, I think, 12 5-gallon bottles of Poland Spring water in reserve, plus, I don't know, 5 pounds of rice and a lot of Spam and corn.
Spam.
Yeah, corned beef and beef stew cans and canned chicken, canned tuna, you know, the kind of staples that'll get you through tough times if you need to.
Okay. So... yeah, now I feel real bad and I'm going to go cry after this, but yeah, a couple of things. So obviously you got some good resilient backup systems around your antennas and stuff. I know I'm trying more often in my, you know, kind of, you know, seasonal, like cleanup items, like Todd was saying earlier, where he, you know, is doing some yard work and things to prep for winterization and that stuff. Are you doing that twice a year on your antennas a lot of times?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Spring and fall.
Okay. How often are you, like, are you doing a lot of coax repair or replacement all, or are your lines pretty decent? Are you testing any of those at all?
No, all the lines are good. The only long run I have is, the VHF UHF, which is LMR 400. Okay. And I go up every spring and I undo the connection and I re-Vaseline it and, you know, make sure it's good. The only issue that I had was, I chose a poor mast, selection. I used a clothes rod for a closet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I thought that the vinyl coating on the outside would keep it from rotting and, you know,
not bad for UV.
it only lasted 2 years and then it rotted out and broke, but, it's, okay. It's, you know, it's just mounted on the chimney now.
So you apply the Callum approach of waterproofing your connectors with Vaseline, not amalgamated tape guy, or just don't like the dealing with the cut of the crap type stuff?
Well, so I've used the tape and the tape doesn't always work 100%. So even if you're going to use the tape, a little Vaseline is just the ticket. Cause I mean, it's petroleum. It repels water.
Yeah. I haven't committed myself to go that route yet. I did it to my DX Commander for a bit. And then I realized after because it was so low to the ground and, you know, the dirt and everything that was getting into it was just like making it like really gross to pull the connector off and fix it and stuff like that. So I ended up going the amalgamated and then electrical tape. But at the same time, that's no better anyway, because once you get that vulcanized and it starts to stick to each other, you're literally going to cut your coax anyway in half because you're going to get so pissed off because you can't get the tape off the connector and you're just going to cut it anyway and put a new connector on. So I guess it's a good maintenance step because you want to test your connectors for continuity and stuff. But I haven't done that yet. And that's kind of one of my fears that I keep hearing on other podcasts. They're like, oh yeah, there's a shelf life to coax. And I'm like, yeah. I heard that story, but then, you know, guess what's going to happen is that shelf life's going to come back around and, you know, my SW, like I was seeing it a little bit today on 10 meters, but I think it was just the band and where I was sitting. But, you know, I'm always concerned that my coax is going to eventually decide that it's, it's time to fail. And it's going to be when everything's covered in snow.
Well, my coax, the way it is now, is the way my off-center dipole is, it kind of hangs on the corner in the air in my house and it comes down through my tree, which is next to my corner of my house and right into the second story. So it actually never even touches the ground.
Okay.
So I think that there's nothing on the ground. So it's like, it's even though it's kind of suspended in the air, I mean, obviously the sun and it does get snow on it, but I think it's better off than just sitting in the ground, getting corroded by constant moisture and stuff. So.
And you should now just prove my point why I said you should put a conduit into where your DX Commander is going. But hey, we won't talk about that.
Well, when are you going to come over and we can do that? I finally cleared that. The place is all cleared out, ready to go.
Well, you tell me when you're not working. Thursday, right, is what it is?
Yeah, I'm going to be in Boston. So, yeah, it's so, not
going to happen. Well, there you go.
Kids are killing me.
They all are. That's what happens, man. And then the wife takes over.
It's like, I'm telling you, I just got to retire and I'll be good to go. But I was retired this summer and I didn't get to it either, did I?
Right, so. Exactly. You just became the poster child to retirement before you retire.
I was as busy as I was this summer as I am doing work. And that's what the problem is. So now, you know, on the weekends when I should be playing, you know, DXing and having fun, I'm out there cutting grass, blowing leaves, moving furniture because it gets so damn dark so quick. By the time I get home, it's already half dark. Mm-hmm. And after next week, we're screwed. It'll be like 4:30. It'll be dark out.
Okay.
You can't do anything. What am I going to do outside when I get home from work? There's nothing to do. Unless I wear a headlamp and be like, what's that psycho cutting the grass in the middle of the night?
It's the circle of trust, man. No harm, no fouls. But okay, so batteries. You were talking about batteries. I know, Todd, you've got generators and stuff, and I sort of the same boat. What do you are your batteries fully powering your shack too, Paul, or no?
So not fully powering. But I've got four 12-volt car batteries that I've got all wired together, and I keep it on a trickle charger. So it's always ready to go. And then, you know, for like, you know, testing purposes or whatever, I'll disconnect the power supply and I'll power pull everything up to the batteries and just run the batteries down to nothing. And then, you know, charge them back up just to keep them fresh.
Now, how often are you doing that cycle wise?
About once a month.
Oh, wow. Jeez, that's committed. Okay. Yeah. I'm barely if I can remember to haul my generator out and start it up.
Because everything's power pulled, it's easy, you know. Yeah. I'm just disconnecting the power pole from the power supply and connecting it to the battery. We're good.
Now, do you all of that's still kind of a manual process, so when the power goes out, you're cutting over, but it's probably what, like 10 minutes worth of work?
Yeah, about that. And I've got plenty of headlamps and flashlights, so even if it was pitch black in here, I could still get it done.
Now, are you backfeeding your panel kind of thing to your batteries or no?
No, I've got no backup for the house.
Okay. It's just the heat and hot water.
Just the heat and hot water and the radio. Yep.
Interesting. All right. Yeah, because that's kind of what I thought was like, I've got the, we'll call my generator the convenience factor because it's more of the fact that I'm tired of sitting in the living room with candles on and entertaining the family, and they all need to charge their cell phone. So the generator suffices that, you know, whole house power backfed kind of scenario. But it caught me thinking, it's like, I don't have any battery backup at all for my shack area. I mean, obviously it would all come up when I fire up the generator, but I've never run the shack with the generator at the same time. So I don't know what the radio would do if I wanted to go send 80 watts down the wire.
Yeah. Mine doesn't do anything.
It doesn't wimp.
It doesn't. Yeah. No, my generator will rev if the water pump comes on, or, right. I forget what it is, 5,500, but it does all the parts that I need it to do. Like, we can live, you know, you could use the microwave, but you'd have to turn everything else off.
It's the same with like the dryer too, like a 240 type.
Yeah.
Thing, yeah.
Yeah. But with the generator on, I got the, of course, I have it run into the shack too, and I don't see any difference. Mm-hmm. But when the power is off and there's no power going into this house and I'm just running off the battery backup, it's freaking phenomenal. So like, I feel like I should just, when I really want to do some ham radio, just go freaking pull the switch and shut the whole, kill the main and just be like, all right, that's doing ham radio.
But that's a public park in your bedroom.
Here's a question though, right? Cause, I do have a small generator as an emergency backup. Like, should I need to run my fridge or whatever? Mm-hmm. But now I've got stabilized gas in storage cans, mm-hmm. just for that purpose, just in case. Okay. So yep. if you're, a gas or diesel generator, do you have stabilized gas or diesel? And how much do you have in supply, and how long will that last you?
Now, when you say stabilize, you're talking about you're adding an additive to keep it balanced and actual gas, so it doesn't turn to
whatever. Stabile.
Yeah,
right, isn't exactly. It called stabile or stabile?
Yeah.
I always put that when I have a couple, let's see, one, two, I probably have four big ones and a whole bunch of little ones that I normally just transfer in because the big ones are a pain in, too hard to fill the generator up when it's full. It's just easy to have them switch. But I put that stabile or whatever it's called in it every time I fill them up, because you never know how long you're going to use it for. Right. And then that way, if it's in the generator and you have some in there, it's just sitting in there and it's not going to clog the things. But I normally run the generator, I turn the gas off and run the generator out just so the carburetor stays clean.
Yeah.
My new portable one actually has it's got a feature on it that before you turn it off, you turn it to this switch and it'll run until it runs out. It'll turn the gas off, but it will run all the way through and then you turn it off.
Yeah.
So it does, like, it clears it out.
But like, yeah, manually shutting out the petcock. Yeah. So you're basically drain the lines and don't keep gas in the line.
But I use the gas for the lawnmower, and then I use it for the generators, and I also use it for the Polaris Ranger that I plow. So that one, I go through gas on that all the time because I'm all winter long I'm plowing, so it goes through. But I only used a whole tank this summer, so it's not too bad. I just filled it up today.
So I'm kind of in the same boat as you guys. I mean, literally, just my only problem is I don't have lawnmowers and stuff because I'm in an HOA. So like, I have to figure out how to get rid of that gas once a year because it just sits there if I don't throw it in the gas. I don't run it in the generator. Bring it over here. Well, that's one thing. Or I'll bring it to field day and I'll run it at field day, for the whole entire weekend. And I'll probably go through the whole, at least whatever I pour into the tank because, I'm powering a camper or something like that. But yeah, that's kind of one of those things that, I have to add to my list of, maintenance. It's like, okay. And here's a little tip that I learned, and I learned this kind of on the battery side. I don't know if you guys do this with your own batteries, but every battery either I build or that I buy, I write the date on it of the month and the day of when I got it. And so what I do that with my gas can is I've got the date, written on it. It's like on one side of the tank, it literally looks like a punch list of how they used to use the stamps on the side of planes. Cause it's just got the date keep rolling. And, you know, it's all for the purposes of, you know, how long has the gas been sitting there? Even if I'm putting stable in it, I've always, my dad always told me, it's like, oh, don't let it sit too long. It'll, you know, just turn to whatever and sulfur. And I'm like, yeah, but they've got, you know, all the additives in them.
Pour it into an oil pan, leave it out in the sun in the summer. It'll evaporate.
I didn't think about that. I'm sure my neighbor
what I do with it is I just throw it on the burn pile.
I'm not allowed to do that either. So strike two, Todd. Any other suggestions? Just bring it to you and Paul.
Yeah,
and
bring
you
guys it to me. We'll take care of it. No, okay. It's funny you say that you do that on the batteries because I've got so many different LiPo batteries and I'm slowly going through and testing them out. And so I put the date of when I got them and, yep. I had a couple batteries. They're 3-cell 2200 batteries and they're very popular and I've got tons of them and I was flying with them and I'm like, you know, when I started going back to flying, I hadn't used them in a while. I charged them up and they just didn't have the pop or whatever. So I bought a new one. Like brand new, and I was like, oh, now this is like feeling like it should be. And I just found out that even though the cells and everything, because I can test them to see like what each cell is at, they just lose their pop. Yeah. So I had from 2019, it's 2024. So, you know, you're looking at 5-year batteries and they're pretty much shot. So I just bring them to the dump and they take care of them for me. But it's good that you put your, the date or at least the year. You know, the month and the year of when you got them, because then you have an idea of how old they are and, you know.
Yeah, because I don't know about you, but I suffer from can't remember shit. So that's always one of those things. I'm never going to remember what the battery was.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's just like, you know, it's kind of funny. They're like, oh, how old are those batteries? And I flip it over. I'm like, oh, 2019. Yeah, those are pretty old. Because they typically last like a year, maybe two, if you're flying them all the time.
Oh, and if you're not exercising them, they're going to just, you know, like Paul did. Was it you did with a set of batteries you had recently where you just powered them all the way down to nothing? Or was that you, Todd, that you were saying that you
put them all the way down to zero? It was the Tough Book.
Right. Yes. That's it.
Yeah. So, I reconditioned the Tough Book battery.
So they've got now. So when you're doing LiPo batteries, you want to put them in storage mode if you're not going to use them. So you want to basically bring them down to like 50% and that's the storage mode. And my battery charges for my LiPos, you can just hit storage and then it'll do it itself. Mm-hmm. But the company now has these things called smart batteries. Can you see them?
Yeah. They got the little BMS in them.
Yeah. So it has in the middle of the connector, it's got a little copper pin. And that goes into the charger. And when you charge these things, you you just plug them in. You don't have to balance them. It does it all through that. And there's a microchip in there. And you can program the microchip to how long you want it to stay charged before it'll automatically self-discharge back to storage mode. This will do, I think this one's at like 72 hours. So I charge it up. I don't use it. In 72 hours, it will discharge itself down to 50%, which is supposed to, you know, you're supposed to do that anyway. But if I have like 10 of these, I'm not going to sit there after flying all day, go down to the thing and watch them discharge. You know, it doesn't happen instantly. So no one does it. So they came up with this. So the battery technology is basically, you know, they're getting better and smarter. And if they can put microchips in it to have them self-discharge or whatever, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And that would save things longer. But these batteries, LiPos, are very, you got to take care of them because they blow up or catch on fire. You can't put them out. I mean, we've tried it. We shot one with a 22 and it just burned and we threw fire extinguisher on it, dirt, water, nothing, buried it, threw it and kicked it in a hole, buried it. It was coming through the sand. This shit doesn't stop burning. So it's the same kind of idea like what's in an electric car. That's like if you have an electric car and you're sitting on huge batteries that are highly volatile, if you get in a car accident, get the hell out of it. Because if you ever look at every accident a Tesla's in, it turns to a crisp because you can't put it out.
Well, they don't even have to get into accidents. They just self-cut.
Yeah. Well, right. But that's what I'm saying. Like these batteries, the chemicals inside, if they get like, if you crash a plane and you damage the battery, you know, the battery will catch on fire or it'll puff. Like, I don't know if you've ever had like a computer where it's just like puffed up. Like, it happened to me a couple, like over COVID, my laptop, I'm typing, all of a sudden it was like, poof. I was like, oh shit. fortunately I was outside on the deck on the picnic table, doing my work. But yeah, you got to be careful. And like, I don't leave these, I put all these batteries in LiPo bags or in army, what do you call it? The bullet cans. But if you put them in those bullet cans, you have to have, you got to drill a hole or two in them so it doesn't explode. The box doesn't explode. So it can vent out.
Building a bomb with a bomb.
Yeah. I mean, they're safe, but they're you got to be careful with them and you can't just let them be. So
shift gears. I guess obviously we could go into battery technology for hours, I'm sure. What are you guys doing for like regular kind of other, we'll call secondary stuff? So a couple of things come to mind, like you guys have stores for spare like batteries. Are you all on rechargeables only for like all the flashlights and that type of stuff for the non-prepared folks in the family that need them? And, you know, are you using any other kind of things like that or around that to kind of be prepared for like even the small, like, you know, blips or storms that happen where we knock out power?
We have a whole drawer full of every type of battery you could possibly think of. And we have those little lanterns all over the house, upstairs, downstairs. You know, they're like, some of them are cheap ones, but other ones are more like you pull them up and there's, you know, it's just like a huge light. Lantern. Or even those, like anytime I like Harbor Freight, you know, you'll get a thing like, oh, get a free flashlight. Like I just grab those things all the time. I got drawers of them. But it's funny because, you know, you look at like, oh, what do you need all those for? But when the power goes out, it's always nice to just reach into a drawer and there's a flashlight there.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Or
central. And I just, yeah. And those, you know, the batteries cost more than a flashlight. So when they die, I just toss them because I'll get another coupon for another free one.
How about you, Paul? What do you got?
So as to like secondary things, I've got a drawer full of batteries. But I've got a lot of AA and AAA that are rechargeables, because, you know, I mean, that's what you go through the most. But in addition to that, I would throw as a necessary secondary item, frequency lists. Yeah. I've got a binder full of, you know, all sorts of different emergency frequency lists, FEMA frequencies, ARIES frequencies, Homeland Security frequencies. And granted, you know, I mean, they're area specific, right? So somebody couldn't take my binder and go to Texas and make contact with the same, you know, emergency services. Mm-hmm. You gotta kind of do the research on your own and figure out, you know, what the emergency plans are for the agencies that are in your area. And most of them have their frequency lists public. And so download them, print them, freaking, you know, put a binder together so that at least when you don't have access to the internet, if you need to reach emergency personnel, you've got a list that you can go to and you can put those frequencies in your radio and you can get the help that you need. I think that's a key secondary thing that often is probably overlooked.
Now, are you good?
No, you know what would be a cool idea is go, we'll get one of those Quanshang, Baofeng, whatever radios, and just put in all those emergency frequencies and just have that as a backup of just that radio, just for that, like, you know, doomsday radio. Like you need to get the, you know, frequencies that you're not going to use on a daily basis, but you might use as a thing. And then they'd be already in the radio, and those radios are cheap. I think TMU or whatever, you can get them for, I think the first order, you get them for like $10. Yeah, it was like, I looked up one, it was like $9.99. I was like, $9.99?
Well, you can also use what you've got. I mean, you know, my 706, I've got the common ARIES channels all programmed in. They're all in my FTM 400 in the truck. And they're also in my HT. You know, so, yeah, 100%. Like, I mean, have those frequencies already stored in channels in your radio. You know, and if you've got an A band and a B band, you know, make the B band your emergency channels, make the A band. Never.
It's always going to be APRS.
You know, I've been putting the Epson repeater on the B band, and Ralph is on either, he's on both ours and them, and he'll be calling out, and I'll be on our channel. I'll respond to him because I won't see what channel he called on. I hear nothing, and I go to the other one.
You AB so, yeah. folks, you Casey and everybody suffer from that. Stop doing that. You're killing. We're not multitaskers. One channel at a time, friends. One channel or put it on scan. That's my advice. That'll solve your problem. Go back to APRS. Anyway.
I hate APRS, though.
Why? What has it done to hurt you?
It beeps all the time. It annoys the shit out of me. Why do I need to know where people? It's like Big Brother follow me around wherever I'm driving.
I happen to like to know that when I saw Todd Beacon that he was actually on the air and I could actually reach out to him. So when I called and he didn't respond, I could be like texting him, "Hey, idiot! I know you're out driving. Why aren't you responding to me?" All right. So yeah, let's kind of. I mean, this is a topic that I know was probably way over, you know, longer than an hour or so we do at our show here. So we if it's interesting to folks, we might break this down a little bit in some certain areas because I'm learning more that I'm not prepared enough to get like the basics together that I think I should. And you know, being the Eagle Scout, that's almost embarrassing to say out loud and on the air and have a recorded record of it. But hey, it is what it is. I like Todd, you and I suffered really hard when we were at Nearfest and we couldn't program a stupid simplex frequency on our FT3. That was what I was like, okay, I'm horrible. We did.
I figured it out.
We did. And yeah. But it required both of us being in the same place. So imagine if you were alone and you were trying to figure it out and you couldn't call me to say, hey, how do we fix this? You know, that's what I'm looking at. So I was like thinking, you know, Paul's going to have to know how to do this. And, you know, he admitted the same thing. He was like, I think it was this, well, and I figured out where it was.
But I don't use that radio hardly ever.
No, but would you? Like, here's the question.
My 300, I could have done it.
Well, yeah, but okay. So here's a scenario. So we're in an ice storm, and you have no, you need comms because your cell phone's dead, and you want to like, say we have a welfare check on the repeater. Okay, yeah, the 300, great. But what happens if your wife, like, you know, like she has to use a radio?
She is shit out of luck because she makes fun of me and says ham radio's stupid. So yeah, you
bad, honey. Here, folks.
Shit out of luck.
So here's my question to you, Paul. Like, is any of your family prepared for that kind of radio side of things? Or you got them, you know, you got radios for them to use if you needed to?
So that's where we have the Channel 3 protocol fallback. Okay. So the family isn't into radio. But my in-laws live across the street, and my father-in-law just turned 78. My mother-in-law's, you know, 72, 74. Or somewhere around there. And thank God they don't watch this because otherwise they'd be mad I was giving their ages out. But but they've got FRS radios, and they know Channel 3.
Okay.
You know, and so my son, you know, he takes radios with him. I keep trying to get him to get licensed. He's, you know, he's 14. He wants to play with the girls and bicycles and, you know, whatever, right? Like, mm-hmm. I get it, but he at least knows, you know, grab a handheld radio, go to, you know, Channel 3 and mm-hmm. I'll be listening. And that's just it. I have in my VHF UHF radio, I have Channel 3 for, FRS programmed in so that I can quickly go to it. I know, right?
You violator.
Not FCC compliant there, but
in case of emergency, use any frequency available.
Yeah, so Channel 3 protocol is the family fallback.
Okay, so you have some mode there. So Todd's basically, you know, told the family sink or swim. I have a feeling I don't.
I just told my wife that. My son, sorry. Zach's hung around me enough that he knows the radio stuff. He even knows, like, he's in the car a lot when I'm on the radio. He's been here in the shack. He will remind me that there's a net, and like he's gone on the air a few times. I think he would know like if there was a problem, if I was out and everything went out and there was an emergency, he'd probably get on the ham radio and call out to me.
Okay.
I think he would. I think he knows. I mean, even though he knows it's illegal, but he says, well, he goes, if the world's coming to an end, you know, I go, if the world's coming to the end, I don't think the government's going to be coming after you for using the radio. I said, so go nuts.
Heck, the government didn't even come after half of the folks that were using their radios when Hurricane Helene rolled through and they popped open on a repeater going, I don't have a call sign, but can I have help? And thank God there's some smart hams to say, sure, we'll help you out. But so ultimately, you know, kind of just in, just transfer of, you know, ownership, like, you know, even though your wife won't have radio, Todd, your son will play with the radio. So therefore, he's not going to let mom just, you know, fade away. So he'll have to be the translator between you and the radio, just to let you know.
Yeah.
But
I just, I'm probably the one person in the world that's kind of looking forward to all shit breaking loose, just so I could say, told you so.
I see. Like,
you heard what's the big idea? So you talk to Australia. She goes, I could just pick up my phone and call Australia. I'm like, do you know anyone in Australia? Go for it. Do it now. Well, I don't know anyone. I said, all right, but I can talk to people in Australia. She goes, so what?
Yes. So, they won't understand the benefits. Okay. Yeah, so,
Look at being on ham radio and understanding how it works. I mean, shortwave, we have all access to shortwave through our radios, there's going to be a lot of communication on shortwaves, at least news and stuff of what's going on, because it's not like you're going to be on your,
So here's an example, like broadcast was totally down when it was in South Carolina. They lost like four or five of their broadcast AM FM stations. And they had no way of like reaching those folks in the middle of like, you know, Neverland. And so, they realized
I'm just saying that those guys that are doing like the pirate radio and stuff, they're going to be on. And then those guys, like, let's say like, you know, like those huge DXers, the guys that are pushing like 10,000 watts at us, you know, calling CQ, you know, a guy in Brazil might be able to give you updates. I mean, I think the ham radio will, especially like 10 meters, 20 meters, whatever is open. If there was a worldwide disaster, I think the bands would, I mean, they would light up. Every ham radio operator would be on there passing information. So,
I'd be on 14300 talking to everybody and not checking in the damn net. So, all right. Well, so we can kind of put a little close to this. What one thing would you tell somebody who's might be listening to, like, who's not done any of this whatsoever, is not like considering themselves in that prepper kind of approach, but wants to like have some level of security. What one thing would you say they could start in or get towards or move in a direction to when it comes to like kind of getting a little bit more prepared for this stuff, ham radio or non-ham radio, that you kind of learned or you gleaned from, you know, doing what you guys built already?
So the big thing, right, is you got to have priorities. And the top priorities is always going to be food, shelter, and then communications. Mm-hmm. And so you always want to make sure that you've got a safe place to be during a weather emergency or some type of natural disaster or whatever the case may be. So you want to be comfortable and safe in your own space, and you want to have food to get you through at least 6 days at a very, very, very minimum, at least 6 days. Ideally, you want to go 2 weeks or more. Have your radio backup communications set up. It doesn't have to cost a fortune. None of this has to cost a fortune. Preparing for, you know, what ifs should never break the bank. You shouldn't have to remortgage your house, right, to cover your bases if something was to ever go wrong. So be smart about it, make a list, prioritize, and make sure that you check the boxes as you're able to do.
That 706 Mark II G does the same thing as a Flex 6400, just a way cheaper.
Yeah.
How about you, Todd?
No, I agree with that. I mean, just, you know, I think, you know, food, water, you know, is the most important. Shelter, you know, you don't want to be out there, but, you know, depending on what the disaster is, I mean, you never know what's going to happen. So just be prepared for anything. And like I said, my goal would be, if there was a disaster going on, my first thing would be like, get everyone home, you know, get everyone home. And if they can't get home, get them home. And then from there, you know, and I live in a, like I said, my parents were two houses down, kind of like your in-laws are across the street. So that helps. And like I said, my neighbor, he's a ex-military, ex-cop, and he's got all kinds of stuff. They run a kennel up there. He's got tractors. He's got everything. And he's basically told, he said to me, he goes, dude, he goes, if all shit breaks loose, he goes, you just come up here. He goes, we'll be set. He goes, we'll fortify this neighborhood. Yeah. I'm like, well, I hope it doesn't go that bad. But, you know, I just think, you know, I have an uncle down in Maryland, and he raised his kids on this big farm. And my cousin bought the house that he grew up in, and my uncle moved like two houses down. But my cousin has really gotten into it, and he's actually got, they do gardening, canning. They've got goats, they've got chickens, they've got, I don't know what else they have, but like, they're pretty much like, if food became a problem, they're prepared to like live off their own, whatever they're
self-reliant
they're doing. Yeah. And they could go hunting. I mean, there's deer in the backfield every day. So like they could survive without having, you know, having to go to the grocery store or something. I mean, I don't have that opportunity to do all that stuff, but it's kind of cool that they're doing it. And, they've done a pretty good job. I was down there this summer, and just the way they've got their coop set up and all their stuff, their water, their chicken, their can, they do the cannery and stuff, and they, you know, they freeze dry stuff. I mean, they do everything. So they're way more prepared than I am. But like I said, I mean, shit, worst case scenario, I just go down there too, right? It's only a 3-4-8 hour drive.
Just don't drive your Tesla. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I don't have a Tesla, but you know, I think about it a lot. You know, I know that there's the Patriot Supply, which is like, you can buy food that'll last like, what is it? Like 25 years or 75 years or something. It's kind of expensive. But then on the other hand, if you look at what you're getting at, how many meals you get based on what it costs to go grocery shopping, it might be cheaper just to buy that shit and go eat that all the time. But that's another way to, and I always think about doing that. Like, okay, maybe clear out a shelf in the basement and just stock it with that freeze dried food. And like you said, I've got gallons of water, like Poland Spring, or it's not Poland Spring, but those big jugs just sitting in the basement just for if there's ever an emergency. I mean, we're on a well, so my generator will pump water. I've got a good filtration system in the house. So, I mean, even if, you know, power went out, I could turn the generator on and get water. Yep. But it's always good to have emergency water in the house. So,
okay. Well, I would say all good stuff. I think one thing that I've kind of learned is just all of that you guys talked about definitely are all like, we'll say for like the bigger kind of events. In my mind, I'm thinking like, okay, micro events, like, you know, hey, we get an ice storm where we're out for 2 weeks or whatever. I'm thinking like, okay, yeah, the bare necessities, batteries, water, all that stuff that you guys mentioned, which is definitely all the things that I've got kind of stocked up just in general for everyday use, and it gets cycled through. But like, even the unmentionables that we always hear on the news, the toilet paper, the paper towels, all of like those things, we all want to make sure that we have them available. And even though I give my wife a hard time, a lot of things like towels and extra blankets and things like that, because I'm tired of figuring out, trying to come up with creative places to store them, but having them available there and all of that, those are important. And one thing I learned, you know, obviously when we had that huge ice storm about 30 years ago, that we, you know, having that stuff available, but more so the one thing that I really am starting to try to develop better is, and you see a lot with HRCC, is coming out what they call the everyday carry bag. I it sounds like it's prepper for me, but at the same time, I'm snuggling up to it, because I think it's important to have all of those components in it, because it makes me more prepared for whatever situations might happen, even just on an everyday perspective. But more so thinking like, okay, well, if I got that small little thing that I'm carrying around with me, what more can I do in my vehicles to have a radio there and that prepared, and extra fuel and extra batteries and all of those things, you know, are all starting to kind of whirl in my head, because, you know, if the end times happen, I want to be able to at least function. But like Todd said, my family's first and foremost, the important thing to have all back circled, and my kids are older. So they're out doing their own thing. They're not thinking about like end times. They're like, hey, I'm going to stay out till 2 a.m. and I'm like, do I have to get up for work the next day is on their, you know, top 10 list. And so, you know, getting them prepared, like I was thinking like putting simple like FRS or GMRS radios in their cars to just, you know, my daughter's a ham and I'm trying to get her to get a mobile rig in her car, in her Jeep. Because I'm like, if you have it, you know, it's great. She's like, I don't want it. It's like, I'm not going to use it. I'm like, yeah, I get it. You won't use it. So, you know, the HT is the other option. So I'm thinking kind of along those lines. But those are kind of the small things I'm just starting with and then just adding to it along the way. Because, you know, it's a plan and it's a process. And like you had mentioned, Todd, with your family down in Maryland, they sound like they've been building for a long time. And that's the thing that I, you know, what I stress to anybody is like, it doesn't happen overnight. You know, don't go mortgaging the house, like Paul said, to get prepared, like in a panic mode. Do it like gradually over time and you'll get there because, you know, emergencies might happen, but they aren't going to be as bad as like the end times unless, you know, we all miss the signs and we're all busy, you know, head down playing ham radio the whole entire time and forget about the rest of the world and what's going on. But I highly doubt, you know, we're in that scenario. So yeah. Good stuff. I'm, you know, it's a good topic to talk about. I like it. I think we should definitely, you know, elaborate more on it, you know, as we kind of go on. And I'd love to have, I was thinking we should talk to BioAno and see if we can get them on to talk battery stuff. But that'd be really cool to kind of just dive into all of that, the geekiness there. Cause I know we've got some setups and we could benefit some really good, you know, knowledge, truth transfer.
Well, and we could literally talk for hours on the different types of everyday carry, right? Like, mm-hmm. I love that you're getting into, you know, a small everyday carry bag, but at some point you'll graduate to the get home bag, you know, which will that will live in your truck, and it's, you know, okay, if the truck breaks down because of an EMP or whatever, right? You need to get home. You've got all the essentials in one bag. You grab that bag out of your vehicle and you can go and you can get home. Oh yeah. We could go on for hours.
Well, okay. Well, so
I'm going to have like a whole tag along trailer to be prepared everywhere I go.
I just keep pulling this trailer with me all the time. It's got everything I needed. I'm good. So go ahead, Todd.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, so here's the thing. We'll throw it out to you guys, our listeners. So, you know, is this something that's interest you? If it is, you know, we're going to create a channel over on our Discord. We're going to open it up. We're going to talk more. We're going to see if we can share. And hey, if there's some stuff that comes out of it and you want us to like do a little deeper dive on everyday carries and, you know, hear what we're kind of going through and share some stories, then let us know. We'll include it in, you know, our next episode or a couple episodes in the future, you know, but, you know, head over to our Discord, check that out. You know, if you haven't joined it, the link is on our website. So head over to livefreeandham.com. And click the Discord link down in the bottom of the footer, and you can join and be part of that conversation. We want to hear, you know, what you guys do for your everyday carries and your preparedness for, you know, disasters in and around, you know, your family and home and job and work and stuff. So, yeah, we'll throw that out there. So, you know, hopefully we'll hear more and we'll have more conversation around that. Be cool. Okay. So, all right. Well, with that, you know, we are, you know, man, we're getting a little longer every time. Our episodes keep creeping up on that 2-hour time mark. You know, it's almost like, you know, we're getting into, you know, the scary parts. You know, we might become a ham radio clubhouse or, you know, HRCC or something. I don't know. This is just a little news.
We got weird. We got a long way to go for HRCC.
True. Very true. Okay.
It takes me 2 weeks to listen to their podcast or his podcast.
And two? Wow. You don't drive far enough, I guess.
No. And then it's like, and then all of a sudden the next one comes up. So I'm like, I'm always behind. So hour and a half is probably the sweet spot. Yeah.
Well,
it's like, I look at a podcast like 4 hours. I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to get to that.
Yeah. HRCC was like that at one time. Okay, well, any last tidbits before I dive in and close out the show?
Just don't break the bank, but always be thinking about, you know, being prepared for whatever may come your way.
And cool. We'll be posting Paul's address in the show notes, so when the shit does hit the fan, just head over there.
Just go there. Dude, I think we're better off going to your neighborhood based off of what you're just telling us.
Oh, yeah. I'm telling you, he's no, like, his plan is, like, he believes that the world is just gone to crap, and his plan is to move somewhere out in the middle of the woods and fortify himself.
Oh boy. All right, well, you heard it here. And hopefully that'll go no further. But anyway, all right, so as always, thank you again for listening to Live Free and Ham. We appreciate all you guys that are part of the community there. And remember, if you haven't subscribed, you know, we're going to ask the question, what the hell you've been doing? Come on. Like, you know, if you're listening to this as your first podcast, hopefully you subscribe and become part of the community. We'd love to have you, and come join the conversation and be part of what's going on. And so with that, you know, there's always several ways you can always connect with us and the show. You can head over to livefreeandham.com/shop. Check out all of our merch as always. And if you listen to us on either Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player, but mostly Apple Podcasts, you can leave us a review over there. But, you know, if you're not into that and you're not an Apple listener, you can always use our SMS link down in all of our show notes and click that and leave us a note, a nice quick note, and we'll make sure we read it on our next episode. And you can always support the show through Patreon and buy us a beer links. But if you are a Patreon member, you get some bonus stuff. You know, we have some great things going on that we're adding to our Patreon list. And so if you want to get early access to a lot of our episodes, because we release on a bi-weekly schedule, but we post every recorded episode up on our Patreon site. So if you're a member, you get early access to those. We're also going to start including some, we'll call uncut or unfeathered or raw, you know, Live Free and Ham. So you get to hear all of the back chatter and you know, banter back and forth before we have to, you know, tighten our belts and look professional and you know, access Seville, Sybil, or whatever you want to call it. So yeah, head over to Patreon, check us out there. You can be part of that fun be able to get access to a lot of the early releases. And, you know, if we do other things like t-shirt giveaways and things like that, you definitely want to be part of that. If you also, you can reach any of our hosts, as always, over at livefreeandham.com. And with that, I want to say thanks again for listening. And from all of us at Live Free and Ham, 7-3.
7-3.
All right.